Hello and welcome back to a brand new episode of the Couch Brotato Podcast. Adam and I are back after a two-week break to dive into the 22nd film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That's right, gang. Him and I are going to discuss 2019's Avengers Endgame. I do want to give you a little bit of a warning ahead of time. There will be some spoilers discussed regarding the events of this film, so please tread carefully before checking us out. So, without further ado, the Couch Potato Podcast presents to you Avengers Endgame.
I used to have nothing, and then I got this family.
In 5 days,
we owe it to everyone we lost to take a stand.
We're the Avengers.
We gotta finish this.
This is the fight of our lives.
Every journey has an end.
Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes.
I miss that giddy optimism.
Avengers Endgame. Rated PG-13. Everywhere Friday.
All right, we are back with an all-new episode. Feels like we were kind of in our own blip there for a couple weeks. Finally back in the saddle again. Adam, how was your time off from the show?
It was fantastic. I went on vacation to nice sunny Florida. Had some great weather and some relaxation, and now I'm back and ready to talk about movies.
All right. My time off was not as awesome as you. Just doing life stuff. Kids getting ready to start their sporting events. Also, a little bit of a sickness ran through the house, so we were on pause for a couple weeks to get through all that. So we are back, and we decided to do one of our most requested episodes. A lot of people have asked us to cover this movie, and it's one of the biggest movies of all time, at least in terms of box office. We're going to talk about Avengers Endgame, which is the culmination of how many years did the MCU run leading up to that? Wasn't it like 10?
Yeah, about 10 years.
Yeah, the culmination of 10 years worth of movies. As you guys probably know, me and Adam, we, along with a group of our friends, go see, at least we used to, we don't do it so much anymore, we used to make going to see the newest MCU movie an event, but they've kind of fallen on hard times in our eyes, so we don't do it quite as much. But instead of asking you the first time you've seen it, because obviously we haven't seen it the first showing that we could possibly go see it, I wanted to ask you, did Avengers Endgame fall below what you were expecting? Did it meet your expectations, or did it exceed your expectations?
So I would say that Avengers Endgame exceeded my expectations. I generally, with movies that I really, really want to see, I avoid the internet. I don't look at any spoilers. Did the same thing with Endgame. Kind of speculated with everyone like what was going to happen, but still stayed away from spoilers. And I kind of temper my expectations. I don't want to go into it thinking that it's going to be the best movie ever because I don't want to be disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been franchises that have done that recently. We've talked about ad nauseum on this podcast.
Oh, I'll give you one. Like I live by the rule. I call it the Phantom Menace rule. That I never get too excited for a movie after I seen the Phantom Menace in movie theaters because I've so amped up for that. And it, I have grown more fond of it in recent years, but still not my favorite Star Wars movie. But I kind of go into movies now with tempered expectations because of Phantom Menace. But go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no. Yeah. That's exactly what I mean. And so, like, when we went, to go see it, it was an experience. It wasn't like just going to see the movie. It was seeing it with everybody in the theater and the theater's reaction to the movie. And of course, like you said, it's a combination of 10 years worth of Marvel movies. So it was just a phenomenal experience going to see it in the movie theater.
Mm. That's kind of how I am too. It definitely exceeded my expectations because going in, they've had a great track record of producing quality films, but I was kind of a little concerned how they're going to put the bow on all these movies, how they were going to tie everything together at the end. So I was like, this is a tough juggling act to do all this. I mean, they had kind of gotten there with Infinity War, which I will say is the better film of the Infinity Saga, but we'll get into that later. But yeah, it definitely exceeded my expectations. Most definitely one of the top three or four best movie experiences I've ever had seeing a movie. Just because, yeah, just being in there with the crowd, everyone's seeing this for the first time. It's not like, oh, well, hey, I'll just catch Avengers at like a 10 o'clock showing when everybody's seen it at like 7. Like, no, you're like one of the first people to see this. And it just seeing with that crowd, people cheering and, you know, crying and just the emotions that people were showing in the theater were just awesome.
Yeah. I don't think it's an experience that could be duplicated. Like, even if you watch it, if you don't watch it for a really long time, say like 10, 15 years, and then you put it in to watch, you're not going to get that same experience. It's not going to be all new to you. It's just that singular moment. And it's really cool to be a part of like that particular crowd.
Mm-hmm. I think that feeling that you get, that you got when you seen this in the theater for the first time with an audience, I think that kind of puts it on a pedestal that it doesn't really belong on.
Yeah.
Because I know me watching it, and this was one of the burning questions. I figured we'll just get into it now. I find Infinity War to be the better movie of the two. For me, I just kind of dig those movies that have that kind of leave you like on the, like you leave the movie theater disappointed, not because the movie sucks. It's like it shit didn't go the way you wanted it to.
And yeah. See, but it went the way I wanted it to.
Like, yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely. But
it's much more gratifying to be an audience member that's not pandered to. That most movies, and especially superhero movies, and we've mentioned that the Marvel movies do this now, but they assume that the audience is stupid and they need to hold their hand to be told how to feel during certain parts of a movie. And those kind of movies, like Empire Strikes Back being one of those downbeat movies,
the goat of
and
bummer ending franchise movies.
Yeah. The hero's lost. Luke lost his hand. Han Solo might die, you know. And it's the same with Infinity War, where you went in expecting one thing and your expectations were dashed. And it kind of turns your thought process around like, oh, man, how are they going to fix this now? And it's such a good kind of feeling to come out, even if it's a bummer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, man, I did not expect that. That was so cool.
Well, I think what was really cool about Infinity War 2 is I know at least I did when I went into that movie before I, you know, walking into the theater, I was expecting one of the big three, which the big three of the Avengers was always, to me anyways, it was Tony, Steve, and Thor. I was expecting one of them to die. Of course, we didn't get that. They just kind of got rid of everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And of course, spoiler alert, they knock off one of the big ones in the end game.
Yeah.
But I thought that was kind of a cool twist. But then again, like when Black Panther is perishing in the blip and Spider-Man's gone, like, okay, you know they're fucking coming back.
Yeah. They're not going to kill off Spider-Man, even though, like, oh, yeah, that's a Sony character. They're going to kill him off, and then he's never going to be in the MCU ever again.
Yeah.
No, that's not the case. Disney's going to want him back.
Oh, for sure. For sure. But, yeah, I think, though, that the experience you got from Endgame kind of has people holding it in higher regard than it should be. I'm not saying that this movie's bad at all. It's not. It's a fantastic movie. It's a very good superhero movie, but I don't consider that. I wouldn't even rank this in the top five greatest MCU movies of all time.
It might crack my top five.
Oh, really?
At least top 10. At least top 10. Yeah. But it might crack my top five. Let's see. Yeah, maybe.
I wouldn't Guardians. I think we've covered Guardians, this before. Yeah. So if my list is different now, I'm a human being. I'm entitled to change my opinion from time to time. I wouldn't put it above the Winter Soldier. I wouldn't put it above Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't think I'd put it above the original Iron Man.
No.
I wouldn't put it above Infinity War.
No.
And I know some people really like the last Spider-Man movie. I'm probably drawing a blank. Ragnarok. Ragnarok, I think, is...
Ragnarok's solid. Ragnarok wouldn't crack my top five, though, I don't think.
Yeah.
It would be in my top 10, but not my top five.
Or even the original Avengers, which that's the first time we'd ever gotten like that big superhero team up too, so.
Yeah, the original Avengers is probably one of my favorites as well. It's just so well done. Endgame might make it to six. You're right.
Of course,
but,
I'm right.
It's close. It's close.
But not saying it's a bad movie at all. I find it very entertaining, and it has some sequences in it that, if you're putting like the scenes themselves amongst some of the best moments in any comic book movie, Endgame has at least a couple of them that could be in the conversation.
Oh, for sure. The things that Endgame doesn't have going for it are, it's not the downbeat like Infinity War. It's very, I hate to call it predictable, because it's not necessarily predictable, but it is fan service in the very best way possible.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to have all of the other movies behind it for it to mean something better than just watching it standalone.
Right. Yeah, this is like a movie
You can't watch it without having seen Infinity War, obviously, but it's just so much better with all the other movies behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know, like... I know you wanted to get into the time travel aspect a little bit. I am on record as saying that when it comes to time travel in movies, it's Back to the Future is the gold standard for me. And I really don't make too much of an effort to pay attention to the physics of time travel and anything else. I just know the rules of Back to the Future are very simple. You cannot run into yourself in the past or the future, or else you're going to fuck shit up. Can't alter anything because it's going to create this branch. It's going to fuck everything up. Your dad's going to get murdered by the school bully. He's going to marry your mom. He's going to become super rich, and he's going to turn your hometown into a shithole. And then, those are my rules of time travel. Anything else, like, I don't care. Like, how's Back to the Future work into this? So, explain the time travel aspect, the time heist, to me.
Anyway. Okay, so there, Scott comes out of the quantum realm, and of course it's that's probably the most derived plot point is there happened to be a mouse on the keyboard and that made it pop out. But anyways, that's besides the point.
Well, that's
and then he's like, well.
Did the blip take out animals too, or just human beings?
Animals too, like everything, like half of all life. I wonder if it counted trees, maybe. Thanos age trees. Anyways, thing that he was talking about is it was only 5 hours for him, but 5 years had passed. So like time works differently in the quantum realm, which is actually true in quantum physics and quantum entanglement. And without getting too boring, he argues with Tony Stark on his porch about how, you know, he does the Back to the Future rules. Like, we're not going to run into ourselves. And he's like, no, that's not how it works. You mess with the Planck scale and you mess with the Deutsch proposition. So I actually looked up the Deutsch proposition because I had no idea. And so what it is time is unchangeable. Time isn't a tangible thing that you can change. Time is entangled within particles. And so if you've ever heard of a quantum computer, regular computers, they'll compute an answer to a problem. So if you give them 2 + 2, a regular computer will give you the one answer of 4. Well, quantum computers can do the same thing, except if you give them a math problem that has multiple answers, they can compute that answer, all of the answers at the same time. And that's how quantum entanglement works. Everything happens all at once in every universe. And so if you jump from one quantum point to another quantum point, you're not necessarily jumping from one time to another. You're also jumping from one space to another because, of course, they're relative and entangled and you can't change it. And so that's what they were talking about with Scott before they went, was it's your new future. If you're going to the past, it's your new future. You can't change the past from your new future.
Okay.
Because their quantum point was, So yeah, that's how the time travel works in this movie.
You know, I've noticed that this is the third movie we've done this year that involves time travel. We did Back to the Future. Yeah. We did Tenet, and now, or some kind of time manipulation. And now we're doing this. I think when we do these going forward, I think I'm just going to create a segment called Adam Explains Time Travel in this movie.
There you go.
Because I can't fucking explain this movie.
I hope I explained it well enough. It is kind of boring when you actually get into the quantum physics of it, but they stretch the rules a little bit because backwards time travel is theoretically possible, but they made up some movie magic to make it actually possible. So
right. And is that how they kill Thanos and then Thanos comes back? Is movie magic?
Yeah. Yeah, movie magic.
Okay. That was a loyal fan of the show, Joey. Shout out to Joey. Wanted us to touch base on the time travel aspect of this film. So we did it at the very beginning.
Yep.
So,
and we did it every when and everywhere because it already happened.
Yeah, see, as Adam explained, it's the Deutsch proposition.
Proposition, yeah.
So I hope you kids out there listening are paid attention to that, because there will be a test at the end of this podcast. No, there won't, because I know I'd fucking fail. Recording is at like 10:30 at night. There's no way I'm going to. All right. But yeah, you want to get into some categories?
Yeah.
Digging into this a little bit? Okay. Sure. We're going to dig into the movie a little bit for those of you that are listening to the show for the first time. Adam and I usually will break down the parts of the movie, favorite scene, favorite moment, favorite line, favorite character, whatever, by category. So give you a little rundown, the tale of the tape. First off, this is rated PG-13. It was released on April the 26th, 2019. So it's a little over 5 years old. So Avengers Endgame is officially a kindergartner now. This movie,
hooray!
It knows its ABCs. This movie stars Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, Chris Hemsworth, Josh Brolin, Mark Ruffalo, Scarlett Johansson, Jeremy Renner, and a multitude of stars that would probably take me 20 minutes to rattle off. So I'm just going to spare you. It pretty much has every major Marvel character that has appeared in any movie up to this point. So you need to know this was directed by the Russo brothers, who also did Captain America, The Winter Soldier. They did Captain America Civil War and they did Infinity War. So they're the gold standard, I think. They're kind of like the Mount Rushmore of MCU directors. Rotten Tomatoes score of 94% from critics and 90% from audiences. The consensus was exciting, entertaining, and emotionally impactful. Avengers Endgame does whatever it takes to deliver a satisfying finale to Marvel's epic Infinity Saga. Which I would agree with that. The box office, this movie had a budget of $355 to $400 million, which I'll get into why it costs so much here in a minute, but it also made $2.7 billion at the worldwide box office. So needless to say, this was a little bit of a hit.
Just a tad.
This was nominated for Best Visual Effects at the 92nd Academy Awards. And you can watch this, of course, on Disney Plus. So, there you go with the tale of the tape. Did you know this part of the program is where we give you some tidbits, little fun facts about the production and the behind the scenes making of the movie. The reason why this movie cost so much is they filmed Infinity War and Endgame back to back. So that took them 200 days to shoot this movie. So they were pretty much most of an entire year to film this. I think they took like a 6 week break in between.
That's insanity.
Mm-hmm. And well, it gets even better. Evangeline Lilly and Paul Rudd were also filming Ant-Man and the Wasp during this as well.
That's crazy. And all of those movies are better than what is out now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's not shit on the MCU currently. I've got a glimmer of hope that Wolverine and Deadpool or Deadpool and Wolverine, whatever it's called, that they kind of pull the plane back up.
Yeah.
Avengers Endgame became the biggest pre-sale title ever on Fandango and Atom tickets, causing them to crash minutes after the sales were announced. It accomplished this feat in only 6 hours. And I don't know, our theater, I know, did it a lot. And I know there were some theaters that were open pretty much around the clock, but theaters kept adding showtimes to meet the demand for this movie.
Wow. That actually kind of goes into one of my fun facts, if you don't mind me interjecting really quick.
I'll go right ahead.
So opening night tickets were resold on eBay for thousands of dollars.
Oh, I remember that. Movie.
And I think the highest one sold was $15,000.
I'll just go see it at the fucking drive-in for that.
Oh, right?
Well, we got lucky. Loyal fan of the show, Joey, I think he was up like minutes after they went on sale and he was able to snag us tickets for IMAX. So kudos to him.
Yeah, that was, I remember because I think we were refreshing the page and trying to get tickets the entire time.
Mm-hmm. That effect caused this movie to set numerous box office records, including it was the highest grossing movie of all time for about a calendar year. I think Avatar passed it again, but this movie had the highest opening weekend in North American box office history, did $357 million the opening weekend. Nothing has come close to that since then.
No, and I don't think anything will, really.
Can
you even think of a movie that would?
No, I think a lot of it has to do with the pandemic kind of changed the way people go to the movies. I think the only thing that came close was Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah.
I think it had a $200+ million opening weekend, but it's nothing close to what the Avengers did. But what helped the Avengers too was the fact that like theaters kept adding showtimes. I was reading in the research, there were theaters that were staying open 24 hours straight just to so people could go see it. Like, I remember showtimes at like 3 o'clock in the morning on like Friday night.
Oh.
Well, I seen this movie 3 times opening weekend. I went with you guys, and then my wife and I went on the Saturday of the opening weekend, and originally they were sold out. Like, our local theater had no show times, and then I just happened to look, and they had added 3 more show times like 20 minutes after I told her it sold out. So we were able to snag one of them then. Then I went and seen it with my wife and my kid the next day, and they were adding show times in too.
It's just the amount of screens that it showed up on, and just the hype for the movie is one of those once in a lifetime things.
The only movie that I can think of, I'm sure there's probably been some that I will leave out, but the only movie I can think of that I was alive for to meet that kind of hysteria was the 89 Batman.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never been.
I remember that. Phantom Menace did have that kind of hysteria.
Yeah. Phantom Menace. Well, I camped out for the Phantom Menace. I didn't do that for Avengers Endgame. Back a simpler time when you could had to go to the old box office to buy your movie tickets. You didn't have the old fancy internet. This movie also had the highest opening day gross at $157 million, and it was the fastest to $1 billion. It did it in 5 days.
Fastest to $1 billion in 5 days. Mm-hmm. And that's domestic?
That's that domestic. Worldwide?
Okay.
I found this fact to be a little interesting. This was the last on-screen role for the legendary actor Robert Redford.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Huh. He announced his retirement in 2018, and Alexander Pierce was the only role that he ever played more than once. He had never done a sequel. Okay. Except for this.
Okay.
This was also the final appearance of Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther, which, of course, he unfortunately passed away in August of 2020 from colon cancer, so we never got to see him come back as Black Panther after that. That's right. I wouldn't really say that's a fun fact, but it's unfortunate. At the time, Robert Downey Jr. surpassed Hugh Jackman with the most film appearances as the same superhero with 10. But of course, now Hugh Jackman decided that that wasn't good enough. He had to tie him back up, so he's coming back as Wolverine this summer in Deadpool and Wolverine. So, last one I got is Brie Larson actually shot her scenes as Captain Marvel for Avengers Endgame first, before she did Captain Marvel. And the weird thing about that is Captain Marvel came out a month and some change before Avengers Endgame.
Yeah, that's... Huh. How did that work? That's a lot of movies all at once, because you had Infinity War, and then you had Captain Marvel and Ant-Man and the Wasp, and then Endgame.
Mm-hmm.
That is a lot. Okay.
Yeah, they require a lot of your their cast. But that's all I had. There really wasn't a ton I could really find to dig into. So, I mean, I think it would have probably made more sense to like dig into, like, if we did like a whole deep dive into the MCU, this would be a much more fascinating category. But unfortunately, like, a lot of stuff you'd have to like kind of, it's like time travel. You have to kind of weed yourself back to, you know, get to where we're at now. So, what'd you have? Yeah.
So, other than my one about the ticket sale, he kind of glossed, over a couple of mine. I noticed some goofs. Of course, I always notice goofs. There's some anachronisms when they go back in time, but the funniest one that I saw, was you can see Scott fighting in the background during the van scene. Like, he's supposed to be in the van hot wiring it and making the thing work, and the big Ant-Man is fighting.
Really?
Yep. Yeah.
Well, cut him some slack, dude. They were like trying to edit two movies at the same time. At that point, they're probably like, oh, God, I just got to get this over with.
Yeah, I thought that was hilarious when I was watching it the last time. I never caught that in the theater. It's like, what? Wait a second. That's not right.
That could be an intentional Easter egg, too.
Maybe. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, you pretty much covered what I had as well. So other than my little ticket sale edition. So.
Yeah, I was surprised by the lack of like really cool factoids about this movie.
I did come across one. Robert Downey Jr. would get bored during his lunch, so he would hire musicians to play during lunchtime.
I did see another one with him, too, where he hid snacks around the set. So, like, he got hungry, he'd start snacking on something.
You know, I bet there's a bunch of Robert Downey Jr. Fun facts that we could go through, too.
Well, why don't we just save it for, like, the inevitable Robert Downey Jr. episode where we just talk about him for an hour?
I mean, we could definitely do a podcast episode about Robert Downey Jr. for sure. He's a very interesting actor.
The Robert Downey Jr. Hall of Fame.
Well, I mean, got to be Avengers, right? Well, at least Iron Man. Iron Man for sure.
Yeah, I would say Iron Man would have to be in the Hall of Fame for him. I don't know. Maybe we'll look at the Robert Downey Jr. Hall of Fame at some point, just because like he's got a very interesting filmography.
Yeah. And some of them are duds too, like The Soloist and Doolittle are some of the movies of all time. Yep.
He's also got though some of his 80s stuff was like Less Than Zero. That movie is, he's fucking amazing in that movie.
Yeah.
But also not a rewatchable movie though. Like that's not a movie like I'm like, you know what I've got a craving to watch tonight's Less Than Zero.
What's that movie called? The Judge?
Oh, with him and Duvall. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that one was good. I liked that one.
Yeah, surprisingly a good movie. I don't know if it's a Hall of Fame contender though.
No, definitely not.
But
yeah, we could definitely do that episode.
Yeah, I mean, we've already done the Tom Hanks Hall of Fame, which you can listen to on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Probably the latest we've ever gotten a cheap plug in on this show. We're at 31 minutes right now. We're way ahead of the game.
We need to get back on our game because we've been on a bit of a break, a bit of a blip, and we need to get with the times.
Yeah, it's like we're just coming out of this thing, and so we're trying to get acclimated again with society, but it's podcasting.
Yeah.
You know, like podcasting is just like a dance, you know, you gotta find your routine, your rhythm. And right now, Adam and I are kind of like, we're two, nerdy white guys at a high school dance trying to like work up the courage to ask the pretty girl to dance. And we get lucky to do it and make total fools of ourselves.
You are my density.
I mean, destiny. Back to the Future reference, which you could also listen to on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. We actually did that one twice. The movie's so nice, we did it twice. All right, well, let's get back to Avengers Endgame. The Martin Scorsese, this is Cinema Award for the best scene of the movie. Now, this one for me was incredibly tough. Got a few nominees, but let me hear, do you have some nominees or you just have one? And specifically
there are some great scenes in this movie. My last viewing of this movie, I was like, do I like the time heist better than I like the battle sequence at the end? And do I count the battle sequence as one scene or do I count the time heist as one scene? Watching this again, kind of with fresh eyes because it'd been a minute since I've seen it. I really like all of the scenes that kind of individualized the characters. I didn't appreciate them as much in the theater because it was like, you know, hype moment. But when Clint loses his family at the beginning. And like Tony's conversations with his kid and Pepper. And even like Captain America talking to Black Widow, just everybody being human. I really, really like Bruce Banner talking to the Sorcerer Supreme too. Like, I never realized how like in depth they got into conversation until this movie, because everything else is going on, you're really not like paying attention. Plus they cut that scene up a little bit. But I'm going to have to go with Avengers Assemble. I mean, how can I not?
Yeah.
It all culminates there. And then the battle ensues. I want to make it the entire battle sequence. But man, did I like the time heist? It's hard. I'll listen to what you had and then I'll decide.
Okay. I had the opening 5 minutes with Clint and his family, because you don't get Clint Barton at all in Infinity War. Like, he's not in the movie at all. And then when you finally get him in Endgame, the first moment's like, oh, he's with his family and like, where's this going? And then like his family just loses him and like just disappears.
Yeah.
I'm like, shit, like, okay. And then
that was one of my favorite parts of Ant-Man and the Wasp too, because in Ant-Man and the Wasp, it like ends on a good note, and then he goes into the quantum realm and then everybody gets disintegrated. Like, just the downbeat of that whole scene with Clint is, yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I think they fumbled the Ronin storyline a little bit, because I was really looking for like, oh, he's coming as like, that's, this is gonna be super cool. And like, I think that they kind of fumbled out, like it just didn't resonate quite as well as it should. I've never understood why Marvel never really let Jeremy Renner cook, because Jeremy Renner is an incredible actor. He never really got to show that off in these movies.
I think it was during the time of Disney's we're only going to do up to PG-13 superhero things. And Ronan's kind of one of those I guess he's an anti-hero. One of those comic book characters that needs an R rating.
Yeah. Like if Hawkeye's rights would have been at Fox, different ball game.
Yeah. Right.
I also had, the scene on Vormir with, Natasha and Clint when, spoiler alert, Black Widow passes away. That's a really...
No.
Yeah. I thought that was a really well done scene. And as going back to like, that's like the moment where they did let Jeremy Renner do a little bit of acting. And I mean, I was never a big fan of Black Widow, the character. I mean, she was cool, but like, I never really was like totally invested in the character. But man, that is fucking heartbreaking to see her die, because the whole sequence when Black or Red Skull tells them that they have to sacrifice the soul, like, all right, Hawkeye's fucking dying.
Yeah.
And then like they have that little balletic sequence where they're trying to fight each other to be the one that sacrifices themselves, and then she ends up dying. I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a very, very good, powerful scene. I don't know whether to include it in the sequence or not, but when Cap is worthy of wielding Mjolnir.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, there's two scenes in this movie that give you, like, goosebumps. And even, like, watching this the other day, like, I've seen this movie, and it's, like I said, it doesn't resonate quite as much as it used to. But when he gets that fucking hammer, I'm like, all right, it's fucking on. And it's like, I was watching it the other day. I'm getting goosebumps talking about it right now. Just picturing that sequence in my head. Like, that was a really cool scene. The Avengers assemble, obviously, because, you know, they give you that, like, all hope is lost. Like, Cap's really going to, like, try to do this on his own. Like, Tony's pretty much beat to shit. Thor's beat to shit. All you got's Cap. His shield's busted to hell. Then you get the Sam in the background, like, on your left. And then, like, you see all the fucking portals open up. And then, like, Black Panther and Okoye and Shiri come out. And then Sam flies through. And then, like, all the fucking Avengers have assembled back. And then that was super cool.
All back. A callback to On Your Left, too.
Yeah.
It was so good.
And then
all time.
The last one was arguably probably like the most star-studded scene in movie history was Tony Stark's funeral.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you kind of knew that at least one of them was going to go. But still, like, the fact that you were with, if you had been invested in these movies for as long as we have, you've been with Tony Stark the longest, and you kind of got to see him grow from being like a self-absorbed playboy billionaire to where, like, in Endgame, he doesn't want to be a part of this because he doesn't want to leave his daughter. Like, he's built this life for himself that he's perfectly content living. His life was not really affected by the blip, but then he kind of realizes, like, I have to do this. And then he makes the ultimate sacrifice. He gives up everything that he has for the greater good. And then, like, yeah, the sequence where it's like everybody, not so much the funeral, but like the sequence where he wrestles the Infinity Gauntlet from Thanos, and then the, you know, he snaps his fingers. Like, yeah, it's a really cool scene too. But I have to go with Avengers Assemble too, because you've been waiting for fucking 10 years for Captain America to say that, and they finally do it.
Yeah. When you were talking about Tony, like, building a life for himself and having to, like, you know, put that aside and do what he needed to do. Like, I guess I just didn't pay attention enough the other times I watched it, because I saw a whole bunch of stuff this last time. When he's talking to his dad, and, his dad's like, I don't want him to end up just like me. And what do you mean by that? He says, well, when it came to the greater good, my own personal interest outweighed that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, of course, he's the opposite, right? He gives up what he wants and goes for the greater good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that I don't know. It was tough between the death of Tony Stark, which we've mentioned there's spoilers. I'm going to put it at the beginning of the show too, but the death of Tony Stark and the Avengers Assemble are probably 1A and 1B.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Tony Stark dying still fucking hits you, and I'm sure they'll probably end up bringing him back at some point. They'll find some loophole to do it.
But, see, and they did the same thing with Logan, so.
Yeah. But I'm giving it to Avengers Endgame. We're talking about Avengers Endgame. Avengers Assemble. And
Avengers
Assemble, I think we can totally give it to that whole battle sequence.
Yeah.
Because I think what makes that scene so fucking awesome is Alan Silvestri is fucking just cooking on that score. Yeah. Like, the Avengers Assemble.
Man, the score for this.
Yeah, the
mm-hmm.
that piece is fucking brilliant.
The lead up to it, it's just so good.
And we normally don't talk enough about the musical score, but I've got a question, burning question about that. But yeah, we're going to give it to Avengers Assemble.
Yeah. And let's start that at Thor, Tony, and Steve all standing out looking at Thanos like, what is this? Oh, it's a trap.
Mm-hmm.
To Avengers Assemble, and then the whole battle sequence.
Okay, yep, the battle sequence with Avengers Assemble.
Yeah,
brilliant stuff. And I'm playing the fucking score in my head as I'm talking right now. I'm starting to get goosebumps. It's like, if you've ever seen the Rock recently in his return to WWE, like he'd come out to the ring and like he'd show his arm getting the goosebumps from the crowd reaction. That's how I am right now. I just need to slap the old forearm around. Of course, I don't have nearly the size guns the Rock does, but nobody does. The Andy Dufresne Get Busy Living or Get Busy Dying Award for the best or most quotable line of the movie. Also a tough one to choose from.
Yeah. Well, we can't give it to Avengers Assemble, right? We just gave the best scene to Avengers Assemble.
Yeah. I mean, I would probably say that that's probably a contender, but I don't want to give it to that one either. I thought about it.
Yeah.
But I think the like it's everything that happens right before and then after that kind of makes that so cool. But
yeah,
my nominee is I Am Iron Man and right before the snap.
That's a good one. I also like I Am Inevitable, but I will see your I Am Iron Man and raise you I Love You 3000.
Oh, dude. I, after this movie came out, I gave that line a test run because my wife and I had just had our daughter. Mm-hmm. So she was probably 4 or 5 months old. I was test driving that line with the kids for about a good month.
Yeah.
And I didn't really get much of a reaction out of it. So I just gave it up. But I remember that was like a big thing for a hot minute.
Yeah. When this movie came out, like I have two daughters and like that whole Tony Stark scene in the I Love You 3000, just it hit me the right way.
Mm-hmm.
That sad scene, but yeah. I'm going to say I Love You 3000 is my nominee.
Also honorable mention to That's America's Ass.
Oh man, that's a great line.
That is a great line. I think he's in the movie a little too much and we'll get into that in a minute, but Scott Lang, Paul Rudd fucking kills it in this because he seems to like just hit the right amount. Like when just before like a scene gets too heavy that features mm-hmm. him, he's kind of there to kind of like lighten it up a little bit.
Yeah. I like when Thor is getting up to explain the ether and, he's like starting to tell a story about Jane and he's just into it, man. The look on his face is just bright and interested and invested. And then they like shoo Thor away because they don't want to hear it.
I will say we can give it to I Love You 3000 just because like that had a pop culture moment, like for a good month or so that was like all over Twitter and had a moment, not a long one, but had a moment. So I'm willing to give it to that one.
Okay.
But I mean, I'm sure most people listening to this is like, you fucking idiots. It has to be Avengers Assemble, but, I only nominated
that to the theme.
Yeah.
So the whole scene got a nomination. So,
yeah, and it fucking won.
It did.
Cut us some slack, gang. We are just coming back off of a 2-week sabbatical. We're trying to get our bearings about us. Getting our sea legs back, as they say. Another difficult category, the McLovin for best supporting or scene stealing performance. Obviously you can't give it to Iron Man, Cap, or Thor. They're featured way too much in the movie. I would say you pretty much disqualify the OG Avengers. Like, I don't think you can really do Renner or Johansson either because they're in it too much.
Yeah. Ruffalo or, I don't think that you can count Paul Rudd either because he's in it quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. And obviously you can't give it to Brolin as Thanos.
Mm-mm. I mean, he's the main antagonist, so.
Yeah.
There's Pepper Potts, but we're not going to give her any awards.
I like Gwyneth Paltrow as an actress, but she kind of comes off as very like her her personality, like when you see her like doing interview stuff, comes off as very pompous. She's like kind of like she has that vibe of Rose Byrne from Bridesmaids.
It's all the stone eggs. She's, you know what? Never mind. I'm not.
Yeah, let's not get into that. But she gives me that Rose Byrne from Bridesmaids vibes, where she means well, but she kind of comes off as a bitch.
I don't know, because like her entire company to me seems like a scam. So maybe she is one.
I just wish, like, just go back to acting, like, you know, Shakespeare in Love, yeah. You know, just act, do your thing.
Acting is fine. She's fine in this movie. I don't mind her, but
is she's not in it that much though. I think she's only in it at the very beginning after Tony yeah. and Nebula come back, and then at the right. battle scene, and then obviously the yeah. funeral at the end, but.
She does all right talking to him in the house, and she does all right with the whole death scene. Like, it's well acted, but I don't think it deserves the McLovin.
Right. I wish I could give it to Bradley Cooper's Rocket Raccoon, because Rocket Raccoon, if we ever did a favorite MCU characters, Rocket Raccoon is definitely in my top five. I love that character so much.
Oh, man. I'm willing to give it to him, though, because, man, him during a bunch of the scenes are just fantastic. Like when he's talking to Ant-Man, it's like, oh, you're like a little dog. Dog want to go to space? Huh? Do you, boy?
I love Rocket so much. I wish they would do a Rocket Raccoon movie.
Oh, yeah, they should.
My nominee is Karen Gillan as Nebula.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think this is a culmination of her arc that started in Guardians of the Galaxy 1.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she goes from being, like, this evil android to where, like, in this one, she kind of, like, she's a robot that shouldn't be showing, like, emotion, but she is a very vulnerable character by the time you get to Endgame. Yeah. And she eventually flips. Go ahead.
Yeah. I think that, You get to see that at the very beginning too, when she's like helping Tony out, like helping him clean his wound and like playing the paper football with him.
Mm.
Giving him the last of the food, you know. Those are all very like sympathetic things that you wouldn't see from her back in Guardians 1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a really cool, like the arc. And she pays mm-hmm. off. She's like, she's really, really good in this too.
Yeah.
But that's my nominee. As much as I love Rocket Raccoon, I think Karen Gillan really deserves this one. She's the only, like, she's one of the, like the few performers in this that have, they're in it enough to where they qualify, but they're not in it too much to where they don't, you know, like she's kind of in that right mm-hmm. median.
Yeah. And, you're right. She even has that, she has to play her past self. And so she has to flip flop. Mm-hmm. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. She has to be,
she does a really good job.
Yeah. She has to be the mean Nebula from the original Guardians to this more softer, but yet still badass version of herself mm-hmm. too. Yeah. I that's who I would give it to.
Between him or a tree.
I wish we'd have gotten more Samuel Jackson in this, though.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like you see his picture, and then he's at the end at the funeral, and that's it.
I really, yeah. You were saying before we came on the air, like you wish he would have came through one of the portals, and I just wish he would have said, yeah. I'm back, motherfucker.
That would have been so cool. Like rolling through one of those portals, man. That would have been.
Is there an F-bomb in this movie? I don't remember.
I don't think so, no.
But see, like,
no,
you get one in a PG-13 movie, and they should have fucking saved it for Samuel Jackson.
Yeah. Rolling out of one of those portals.
I don't know. Like, when I said that, though, I just pictured the Dave Chappelle skit with the Samuel Jackson beer. I'm back, motherfucker. That's a horrible Samuel Jackson. But yeah, we're going to give this to Karen Gillan as Nebula, I think, unless you have a nominee you want to bring to the forefront.
No, I think we hit the nail on the head. I think Nebula gets it.
Right. Yeah. All right. Agreed. Nebula, you're our winner. The IMDb Drug Dealer Number 2 Award for the performer that you've seen him in something before, but you don't know who they are. Can't really give this one away, because if you've invested the time into watching these Marvel movies, chances are you know who's playing these characters. There's not anybody,
yeah,
like any of the main characters or anybody that's got any kind of like ounce of screen time. I know at the end, Ty Simpkins, he played the kid in Iron Man 3. He's also in Jurassic World.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And maybe even the lady in the elevator that was false security on Tony and Steve.
I don't even know who that is.
She's a really good comedian. I don't remember her name. But, you know, if I IMDb her, I would.
Oh, yeah. See, look it up. Or maybe John Slattery is Howard Stark. Guys might remember him from Mad Men. Which I think most people listening to the show don't watch Mad Men, which if you haven't, you should. One of the best shows of the last 20 years. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe one of them too, but
you can't nail it down. There's hardly anyone. Probably one of them, but they don't contribute enough to even qualify it.
like neither one of them actors give you the Leo pointing scene from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which may be what we renamed this, the Leo point.
Yeah.
Maybe something like that. Because that's like when I thought of this category, that's what I thought of, was like him pointing at the TV. But yeah, nobody really of note to nominate for this. The next one is the most 2019 moment of the movie. I would say this is the most 2019 moment of the movie. Is like, this was the movie event of the year, and like, this is like probably the peak of comic book movies. I don't think anything from DC. Marvel since this has really come close. I mean, I guess maybe Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah.
But even with that, I don't think that was quite the cultural phenomenon that Avengers Endgame was.
No. No, you're right.
So, I mean, that's the most 2019 moment of the movie for me.
It's either that or all of the Samsung galaxies that are shown in the movie.
Oh, damn, yeah. Samsung must have paid a mint to get their shit featured in there.
I think it's like, what, what were they on? Like the S6? I don't even know.
Fuck, I don't know. I've never owned I've had one Samsung phone in my entire life, and it was a piece of shit. I had to keep rebooting the phone. Like, it's serious. I shit you not. Like, I text more than I call people. Every 10 text messages I would get, either I would send them or receive them, I'd have to reboot the phone. And once I hit that 10 threshold, like, I couldn't get phone calls or anything. When my wife was pregnant with my son, she tried to call me to tell me that they were going to induce her and we had to go to the hospital that night. I had already hit the 10 text message threshold and she couldn't get a hold of me. She had to call me at work. To tell me, like, hey, they're going to induce me tonight. You should probably leave work. And being, you know, first-time father, frantic, like, the last thing on my mind is rebooting my phone. So we're sitting there in our hospital room. It's like 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm a nervous wreck because I can't sleep because my son's about to, you know, enter the world. I'm just, fuck, I'm just going to reboot my phone. And once it got rebooted, like, I got all these text messages and voicemails from where she was trying to get a hold of me.
Well, that's awful.
Yeah. And I since then, like, I told her about the next day. She's like, when we go home, you're going to go get an. She had already bought an apple. Like, I think it was like two or three at the time. She's like, just go get you an iPhone when we get out of here. So I'm like, yes, ma'am. And we got an iPhone and have been on it ever since. So sorry, Samsung. You might have been good enough for the Avengers, but you're not good enough for the host of the Couch Potato Podcast.
No. If we had a category for the best phone of the movie, there wouldn't be one.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Best product. Oh, hey, maybe a future category, the best use of product placement. There definitely not the Samsung Galaxy phones in this.
Nope.
The Indiana Jones It Belongs in a Museum Award for the prop you would want for your personal collection. Now, this one should be pretty good because there's tons of stuff to choose from in this movie.
There's Mjolnir, the Infinity Gauntlet.
How do you pronounce Thor's hammer? I've always pronounced it as Mjolnir. Is it? And you're the smarter of the two, so.
I always said Mjolnir. It's just kind of rolls off the tongue. I can look up the pronunciation. We can figure it out.
Get that robotic Mjolnir, voice at Mjolnir.
Yeah.
Mjolnir.
There we go. It's actually the first Google thing. So let's see.
Mjolnir.
Okay, Mjolnir.
Was that the Google voice? It sounded like me saying it. Did Google steal my voice to AI?
It did.
It sounded like it on the call. So yeah, like I'm fucking suing Google now. You stole my voice for your fucking, like, how do you pronounce words?
Deepfake.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
I want compensation. I want Captain America's broken shield.
That would be really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Not the full form shield, but where like that thing has seen some things. Like he was almost done. And like, it was essentially wasn't even a shield when he went to the fight. He essentially had like what looked to be a jagged metal shank.
Yeah. You know, what would be really cool is if you had the bottom half of a mannequin and you had Captain America's 2012 pants on there, and then you could just lay it on a table and say that you had America's ass.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, check that out. See it right there? That's America's ass. Put that up on a wall, frame it. Get one of those like big like shadow box.
Yeah,
to shadow. Where like that pops, like I you don't want that flat because it really loses its effect. You can't say it's America's ass when it's as flat as a board. You have to get that pop to it. That's a good one. But yeah, obviously like the Infinity Gauntlet would be super cool. The Stormbreaker, I love that. I've actually kind of grown more fond of that than Mjolnir.
Mjolnir.
Mjolnir. Okay. You'll say that, and I guarantee it before the show ends, I'm going to go back to the old way I pronounce it. But
I don't even remember her name. Like Natalie Portman's assistant, she would call it Mia Mia.
Oh, yeah. Kat Dennings.
Yeah.
I don't remember her name either.
Yeah. It's like Darley.
Darcy.
Darcy.
Was it Darcy?
Darcy.
Yeah, I think it's Darcy.
Darcy.
You know, like Joey, who was the inspiration for us doing this episode, is probably going to text me later on. Like, you guys fucked up so much shit in this.
Well, probably.
He's got his MCU encyclopedia. He's probably referenced it right now. Like, yep, it's Darcy. How'd you not know that?
Sorry, Joey. I remembered eventually.
Yeah, we'll just look it up later. But yeah, I want Captain America's shield.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think I'm going to go with America's ass.
Okay. In a shadow box though, right? So it pops.
Right.
Okay. Right. That's fair enough. I that would be an interesting conversation piece when you walk in your house, like, oh, Captain America's, outfit you got there. It looks really cool. Because that's not just any outfit. Why do you got his booty? Why do you got his booty like face now? Like you just don't have like I would easily display the star, but you'd have to get like when you go into a museum and they have that little tidbit, like that little sidebar with information on it. That's when you have like quotation marks, America's ass quotation mark. And just to give the rundown of it real quick.
I kind of want to edit in this part of the podcast of like Scott Lang's line of that's America's ass. And then immediately put in Harrison Ford going, it belongs in a museum.
If we weren't in such a rush to get this out, I would totally let you do that. All right. The Hall of Fame. This one should be good. Hall of Fame, if following people, whether it's an actor, actress, director, composer, whatever, if there was a movie Hall of Fame, would this be the movie that is featured on their Hall of Fame plaque? Robert Downey Jr.
No. And the only reason I say that is because Iron Man, Avengers, other things.
Yeah, definitely no for Downey, because without Iron Man, this doesn't happen. Or if Iron Man fails, this doesn't happen. If he sucks as Tony Stark, this doesn't happen. So yeah, it has to be Iron Man.
Iron Man.
Chris Evans.
Again, no. The, you know, Winter Soldier, best one. Now, if we were just doing Captain America in this movie, I would say yes.
I have a little bit of a burning question regarding this here coming up. So,
okay,
hold your thought for that. Hemsworth, I'm going to say no. I think it has to be Ragnarok.
I get that he's like clinically depressed in this movie, but I don't like the whole like Bat Thor joke of this movie.
Really? I don't. A couple of years ago for a Halloween party, I basically burned almost an entire tank of gas trying to find a Fat Thor costume to go out to a Halloween party. Like I tried to find all, I couldn't find nothing.
See, it's a cool costume idea, but
I love that Fat Thor though, because I kind of relate to him because I'm fat too.
You're nice.
I just don't have the hair. Sure.
No. but I feel like they make Thor the butt of a joke all the time, and which is fine every now and then, but I think they just overdid it eventually.
Well, I think that the overdoing was in the Love and Thunder.
Oh, definitely. Like they overdoing it is like gradual until Love and Thunder, and then they just they turn the dial to 11.
Yeah, now I say Ragnarok because I think Thor went from being kind of a one-note boring character to where like he is like they made the character at least on the same level as, because let's be real, like the three Avengers that you're most interested in are Thor, Captain America, and Iron Man. Maybe to a little bit of a lesser extent, the Hulk.
I wish the Hulk's movie was better, but yeah.
But I think like Ragnarok put him on the same level as Downey and Evans.
Yeah, no, Ragnarok was fantastic. And I know people, I can't say people. I know a person that doesn't like Ragnarok because they thought Thor was too funny. But you know what? It's my favorite Thor movie. So,
well, I think the job of any good director is playing to an actor's strengths. And like, I think Chris Hemsworth has terrific comedic timing. And I don't know. I think it's because of how, like, he's a handsome man. He's very, you know, big, like he looks like an action star. And I think they try to shoehorn him into that, but I think he's a brilliant comedic actor. He's proven it in numerous films. Like he's got terrific comedic timing. And I think that plays into his strengths more than him being the one note action star. And I think the Extraction movies, do a better job of him being just the straightforward action guy more than Thor in the Dark World did.
Well, yeah, I agree.
The last one I have for the Hall of Fame is the Russo brothers. I think yes.
Yeah.
Because they managed to pull off something that every studio has been trying to do, is like they managed to take over 10 years of filmmaking. What is Endgame, the 19th or the 20th MCU movie?
I think it's the 20th. Yeah.
I mean, they managed to put it all together and they made it work. And the fact that this is one of the top five highest grossing movies of all time, set numerous box office records. This is the movie they'll always be remembered for.
Right. And I mean, you pretty much said it, like they were able to take all of that and do something that nobody else was able to do and make it work. Like they even gave everybody the right amount of screen time.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's hard to do in itself.
Yeah, they balanced it so well.
That cast. Yeah.
Yeah, it has to be them. This has to be their crowning achievement.
Right.
Burning questions. I had a few. We answered. We've actually answered two of them already. Was this the peak moment for comic book movies? I think so, because it's one of the two or three highest grossing movies of all time. I don't think comic book movies have ever been as popular as they were during this time frame. So we kind of already answered that. Mm-hmm. I ask if Endgame or Infinity War was the better of the Infinity Saga Avengers movies. We both agree that it's Infinity War.
Infinity.
Yeah. But the other two that I have, I'm going to go with a little bit of a hot take question first, and then the big one. Is Alan Silvestri's Avengers Assemble score the greatest comic book movie score piece of all time?
I'm going to say no.
All right. I figured you would, and I think I already know what your answer is going to be to what the best is, but I'm going to say it is.
Okay.
And the only reason I say that is great. Like this, I don't know, this, every time I hear that, like the crescendo where it gets like that, like, okay, it's fucking on now. Like,
yeah,
I remember like they played it like in the scene in the original Avengers where like it kind of, they just, the camera circles around all of them. They form that circle when everybody's coming to attack. I'm like, okay, the Avengers are, they're getting together. They're going to fucking do it. And then like, even in the end scene, the final battle, when they start, all right, everyone's back, they're gonna fucking win. And it starts playing, like, okay, like I get goosebumps. No other comic book score piece has done that for me. Like, I would say, like, the Batman theme is pretty cool. But I think I know what yours is gonna be. So, what's the greatest for you?
Okay, so I would say the Batman theme is really cool because Danny Elfman is great. But I'm gonna cheat a little bit. So Superman's theme, John Williams.
Is you're not going with that?
It's not. Yes, I'm not going with that.
Oh shit! Curveball.
But I loved their use of it in the Justice League movie. Fantastic use of that theme. I nerded out super hard when that happened, but
about the only thing you could nerd out about in that movie.
Pretty much. But I'm going to cheat and say that both Batman and Danny Elfman's original Spider-Man score have influenced those particular superheroes' themes throughout their media. So like Batman, Danny Elfman's theme had influenced the video game music, even though he didn't do it. It influenced really heavily the animated series movie, or animated series TV show too. And you can tell that they're trying to mimic Elfman's score. Mm-hmm. And the same with Elfman's score for Spider-Man. Now, if you play the new Spider-Man games, the score is definitely not Elfman's, but you can hear Elfman's style in those games. So Avengers as a singular piece, you know, excellent, awesome, but I don't think that it touches the other two as well.
I was actually shocked that you didn't. I was like, when I asked that question, like, he's going with fucking Williams.
I am a Williams fanboy until I die, and I will argue that he is the greatest cinematic composer of all time.
Well, I don't think anyone's gonna fucking like argue you on that point. I don't see how that's even theoretically possible. And
getting back to Avengers, it's a fantastic score. I definitely think, like, if you don't get goosebumps listening to that music, then you're not human. However, when it comes to best superhero scores, Elfman is in, like, the lead with those. And of course, I cheated and used two, but I had to illustrate my point of it influencing, like, literally all of the other media about those superhero characters.
Hey, I can live with that. I can live with Elfman's. Like, I love the Batman score, that dun, 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 dun. I fucking love that. Like,
yeah.
I think it was my phone ringtone for like a good year and a half.
That's an excellent ringtone.
I need to bring it back. Get that ringtone.
I actually have Mark Hamill's Joker laugh as a text tone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, like, I changed it. I had the Batman theme, and then I had the Doctor Who theme, because I really like that.
Yeah.
And now I've just reverted back to old middle-aged white dad ringtone, where it's just the actual fucking phone ringing, which is, like, the lamest fucking ringtone you could possibly have. That's if I even turn my phone on. 9 times out of 10, I just leave it on vibrate or silent, so I don't... It's like, I don't feel like... Because 9 times out of 10, whenever I get phone calls now, it's fucking like, it always pops up my phone as spam alert or spam risk. I'm like, I'm not fucking turning my phone on for Google trying to steal my voice for their fucking AI, like, pronunciation apparatus.
A Milner.
Yeah.
Well, as long as your wife isn't getting induced, then you can have it on vibrate.
Well, she would just text. Well, first off, don't have to worry about that ever again. I got fixed. Second of all, she would probably text me like, hey, you know, like.
Yeah, probably.
All right. Enough of that. My other burning question that I have, who is the MVP of the Infinity Saga? I'm just like, basically, like, Endgame and Infinity War, like, just those two movies.
Okay, so this comes down to the age old nerd fight of who's better, Cap or Iron Man.
Okay, I was gonna say it has to be one of them too.
And we're gonna piss off a lot of people by picking one or the other. And I think I know who you're gonna pick.
You know me well. I think I know who you're gonna pick too.
So we're definitely on opposite ends of the spectrum here.
Yeah, this is basically going to boil down to, it's like Captain America Civil War audio style.
Exactly. So it's Iron Man.
Okay, make your case for Iron Man.
All right, Iron Man. Like you said, he was a billionaire, playboy, and he was super selfish, didn't really care about anybody but himself. And he started the MCU. We didn't start with anyone else except for Iron Man. Of course, Captain America was the first Avenger, and, you know, we got his movie, but Iron Man. We even ended with this movie with the clangs of Tony Stark making the Iron Man suit. In the first Avengers movie, it wasn't Captain America that went through the wormhole to get rid of the nuclear bomb. No, no, no. It was Iron Man. And Iron Man is the one that, you know, basically was right at the beginning of this movie. He said, well, we were supposed to put a suit of armor around the world, and guess what? We lost. And it was because what you did. And, you know, Captain America didn't have anything to say to that. And then at the end of the movie, I mean, he literally does the opposite of what his dad would do. He abandoned what he wanted. He had a perfect family. Wasn't affected by the blip. Didn't have to help, but he did anyways. And he laid down his life for literally half of the universe. Iron Man was a little bit more of a superhero than Captain America. Now, Captain America was worthy of Mjolnir, and he did, you know, some pretty cool stuff in this movie. He stood up against the entire army when he, you know, didn't have anybody by his side. But in the end, he didn't make the sacrifices that Tony Stark did.
Well, you made a very valid case, but I think your case is more reflective on who the MVP of the MCU as a franchise has been.
Well, again, like we said, you can't take Endgame without having all the other movies behind it.
That's very true. And I think that if you're going to look at it from that lens, then yeah, I probably cannot make a singular case for Captain America. Although I will say, if you're just looking at it strictly from the prism of Infinity War and Endgame, I would say that I think Cap shows like great leadership in that. Like, you know, like yeah. He even makes amends with Tony. Yeah. Like, he has to make amends with Tony Stark. He has to swallow his pride. And yeah. Plus, I mean, he's willing to make the sacrifice too. Like, he basically is going to go down with the ship. Like, he's essentially the only one left. It's him against 1,000 until like everybody comes and bails him out.
Well, I mean, what is he going to do? Lay down and die or fight? So, I mean, the choice isn't very hard.
How weird of a spin would that have been? You're like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm out. And just fucking walked away. You just like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm done.
Well, I mean, like, he could have fought and died, or he could have just went like, yeah, I'll just get ripped apart Adam from Adam like you want me to.
It was like, nope, I'm good. See ya. You motherfuckers are on your
own. He could have probably like 180'd and hauled ass in the opposite direction super fast because he's a Captain America.
Yeah, like dead sprint. No, I think your case, and I guess I would be kind of contradicting myself too, because yeah, I these movies, I think, work more if you have invested the time into them. And I think Tony's story arc, I think, resonates more if you've invested the time into this franchise. So I will concede defeat that it would be Tony Stark as the MVP of the Infinity Saga.
Plus, if you take into account Infinity War, I didn't really argue in Infinity War's case, but Iron Man's fight with Thanos is way cooler than Captain America's fight with Thanos. When Iron Man is fighting Thanos, you get like, you know, cool like swords coming out of his suit and bombs and lasers and everything. And then with Captain America's fight with Thanos, it's just like him grunting and struggling, and like when Captain America runs up to Thanos, he's like holding his hand and trying to keep it back, and like it looks like he's struggling to keep in a fart. And with Iron Man's fight with Thanos, like he gets a planet thrown at his face. So
why they Cap's a product of the 19, you know, World War II. That's fisticuffs, not boxing. It's like, you know, Jack Johnson and Tom O'Reilly fisticuffs.
It's true.
Put up your dukes.
There's more leading up to the Iron Man fight. I do concede with that. But because like Thanos just pops into the battlefield, and then Iron Man has to go meet him immediately. So there's not really a lead up. Mm. But I still think Iron Man's fight with Thanos is cooler in Infinity War.
Oh, yeah. Neither one of them, though, top like Thor, like, you know, to me, that's the scene of Infinity War.
Yeah. Thor entering the battlefield.
Final category before we wrap this up. The Finding Forrester, You're the Man Now Dog Award for the biggest life lesson taken from this movie. I'm just going to flat out say it, like, listen to the smart people. That think that goes for just society in general, especially the way we have evolved as people the last 5, 6, 7 years. Listen to the smart people. They know what they're talking about. Tony Stark wanted said he wanted to build a shield around the Earth to protect Earth. No one listened to him, and then look what happens.
Yeah, I mean, and you can apply that to, not going to get political on the podcast, but, like, I bet you both sides of the aisle will agree that we don't do the right thing when it comes to global disasters.
Right.
So listening to the smart people is what we need to do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the candidates that are running probably are at the point of their mental capacity where they probably believe the Avengers are real.
Oh, don't worry about it. We're going to get the Avengers on it.
Yeah, don't worry about that hurricane. That wiped out your town. Iron Man's on the case. Like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? Like, why are you running on that platform? They're not real people. All right. Enough of that. Adam, you got any last points before we wrap this bad boy up?
Yeah. So when it comes to superhero movies, you get a lot of pushback from filmmakers saying superhero movies aren't cinema. We can argue for or against the point, but like we said earlier in the podcast, this was an experience. And I don't think that there's a great concert isn't good cinema. It's a concert, it's music, but it's still an experience, and it's still, you know, and this is the same thing. It's a cultural phenomenon that you're not going to get any other time. So,
well, I think the only other one, now that I think about it, the only other one I think comes close, this was actually just this past summer when we got the Barbenheimer.
Oh yeah,
that was. Yeah. But I still don't even think that matched what Endgame was doing either. No. So,
right? I don't even think that matched Batman 89 or Star Wars. But yeah, that was still a force to be reckoned with for sure.
Man, I wish I could have been alive when Star Wars came out originally. That would have been so fucking cool.
That would have been really cool. But even if you're on the side of the camp where you're like, "Well, superhero movies suck. They're not actual movies. It's the experience. It's the cultural phenomenon that goes on with it. So if you missed out on it, it sucks. But you know what? Hop on the hype train every now and then and get a good experience out of going to the movies.
Well, I think with this particular one, though, is like you have to my mom, if I were to show her Avengers Endgame, she'd be fucking lost because she's never seen any of these.
Right.
Like, who's the guy that turns real small? Why is there a talking raccoon? What's his deal?
Right. So hop on the hype train early.
Yeah. Like,
and you might get a great experience. Right. Out of it.
Well, I hope that you guys and gals enjoyed Endgame as much as we like talking about it. We will be back next week. I do promise the sabbaticals are going to be no more. I mean, we should be ready to rock and roll. Be sure to follow us on social media. We are on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok. Those links are in the show description. Give us a follow. That way you can keep up on all the latest news and notes going on with the show. If you like what you heard today, please, please take a brief moment and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We do appreciate it. Let us know how we're doing, and if someone decides they want to look up why Adam wants America's ass framed in his house, they may find this episode. So please give us a review. We greatly appreciate it, and we will be back next week. Scout's honor, not lying. We will be back with a brand new episode next week too, so be sure to subscribe so you don't miss out. So until next week, we will talk to you guys and gals later.